Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. He's speaking to us from South Florida. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Thank you much for inviting me on.
Is gold the big story this week?
Yes, it is. It's having a good day. Didn't even need a good day to make this a good week, and I've got the COMEX August contract off just a little bit today, but that's really understandable considering the rally we've had in gold over the last few days. I was looking for Sunday night. I put out a forecast for 2306 basis the August contract, and we came within 30 cents of that last night. But when you look at the forward month, the June contract, it's actually exceeded a comparable long-term target, meaning that this rally is for real. It's going to pull back, and I think we're going to get another leg up.
Well, when you said you set targets, what kind of numbers are we looking at?
Well, I use what I call hidden pivot patterns, and the one in gold went back to last October, so it goes back a ways. And I've been sort of focused on a 2306 target, which at the outset would have required a pretty good breakout, a breakout from a range in which gold is traded. So it did break out, and that's something different. You know, we've seen gold rally so many times where it just got to that point where everybody's thinking, hey, this is looking pretty good, and then everybody gets crushed. Someone, character referred to in my chat room as Mr. Slammy, comes in, and before you know it, gold's down $60, $70 in a day, and whatever hopes you may have had have been dashed. But as I said, this time I think it's for real.
Are other precious metals joining in?
Silver, almost. I had a target in silver at $27, and I think it was 50 some cents, but it only got within a nickel or a dime of that and didn't quite get there. Gold, as I just said, did get there, but silver's lagging a little bit, but it's still, you know, still getting dragged higher, and at some point I think the gold silver ratio will come down a little bit from current extremes, so that silver is somewhat favored. In fact, silver today is making up for lost time. The May contract is up 14 cents, whereas the gold comparable gold contract, let me just double check this here, is off about $3. So silver, relatively speaking, is a little bit stronger today than gold. And I think that it will continue to adjust so that the ratio is more in tune with the historical.
Palladium and platinum, are they in there as well?
Let me actually take a look at platinum, just so I can give you the latest. And, of course, there's a big difference. Silver is, when metals are actually used industrially, it has its own impact on the prices. Let's see. I've got the May contract trading at 943, and having bought at some point platinum nobles, I can tell you that it's way off, still way off where I bought them. But let's take a look at the I'm trying to think of which contract to look at here in platinum. Well, platinum's had a pretty good move. Just at the end of March, trading 895, we're up around 950. So all the metals are moving nicely.
Does that include copper?
Yes, copper. Let me see here. Copper is screaming as we speak. Big day yesterday. Copper went from around, this is basis the September contract, went from around 410. We're trading up around 430 a pound. And copper's been in a very steep uptrend since early February. We're trading around 3,700, or let's call it $3.70 a pound then, and we're up at 430 now. So we've had it's about a 13-14% move.
Copper, big demand because of EV construction and because they want electric cars on the road. They're going to have to put up more power lines and build more generators, everything that take tremendous amounts of copper. And just when it comes to car building, an EV uses 83 kilograms, 183 pounds, or 277% more copper than your regular ICE engine car. So each one of them is a copper pig.
Well, it's going to get pricier here. Copper currently is $4.29 a pound. I think it's going at least to $4.60. So wherever copper is being used, it's going to be more expensive. But you know, the big killer here is crude. Crude is headed. I've had a target out to $88 and change for the NYMEX contract, and we're currently at. Let's see, where are we here with $85? So we've still got a few dollars to move there. And, of course, it's one thing when gold and copper and silver prices go up, things that fabricators that use those metals have to charge higher prices. But when crude goes up, virtually every single thing in the world that we buy will increase in price, because there's nothing that happens on planet Earth that is independent of energy resources and the price of fuel. So this is another thing that the psychotic bull market is contriving to ignore, the fact that we're getting a lot of future inflation in the pipeline as crude moves toward $90 a barrel, and who knows how much higher than that even.
And, of course, we have to slip in the war factor. We have Ukraine taking out Russian refineries. So now Russia can't export gasoline. It has to keep it at home.
Right. And you know, I've never been able to figure out the energy markets. It's very, very complex. And you can have cut times when it's completely determined by the strength of the Chinese economy. China is the biggest buyer at the margin of energy, but then you've got curtailment of supply, which can affect it. And you know, there are no shortage of theories as to why which interests want oil up at this point and who wants it down. But it seems like our enemies benefit most when crude prices are rising, and certainly. Vladimir Putin, who's always in there, making mischief, picks up a lot of edge as crude moves higher, because it gives Russia the option of selling less fuel to reap the same number of dollars. So higher energy prices are definitely helping the Ukraine war from Russia's standpoint. And helping producers, of course, but not so much the rest of us.
Is China's economy picking up, and is that increasing the demand for crude?
No one knows. I mean, it's sort of like reading the tea leaves on the Russian economy from the time of Stalin into the 19, well, till the wall came down. You know, no one has a clue really where China's economy really is, and any figures that you read are officially, they're, well, I guess they're no better or worse than the numbers the U.S. puts out, the kind of skew inflation and employment in ways that are congruent with political, well, I hate to use the word exigencies, but I'll use it anyway.
Now, somebody described on a business report yesterday, the U.S. economy is so hot compared to the rest of the world that if the U.K. joined as the 51st state, it would be the poorest state, even poorer than Mississippi. That's how well the U.S. is doing compared to the rest of the world right now.
Well, I guess the rest of the world is a pretty sorry mess, because when you look at the U.S. economy, the prosperity is so, it's let's say the distribution of it is only affecting a relative few. And I don't believe anything I read about the U.S. economy. I think it's mostly fired by rising asset prices. And I don't even know what the employment part of it is. You know, we've talked about that before, about how it seems to be coming mostly in the healthcare sector and in government hiring. And of course, the last thing we want to quote unquote improve the economy is hiring by a government sector that produces absolutely nothing. So that's where the growth is. And
well, you keep producing new billionaires like Taylor Swift. But so
she's a billionaire too now.
Yeah, it's a 1.12 billion, something like that. But again,
yeah,
so you have 2,700 billionaires in the U.S. They have all the money, and Joe and Mrs. Average, not so much.
Yeah, that's a funny thing. You know, it's we've made billionaires literally overnight. Trump, who has problems, you know, when he was trying to post bond, and they Letitia set the bond at I think $450 million. He was having trouble making that nut. But when his ownership in a social media company, when the shares zoomed to some ridiculous height, we're talking about an increase in Trump's wealth of $4 billion or some such, so the paper wealth is just doing remarkable things these days, and it can change the picture. It changes the top 10 list of billionaires. But all right, so Taylor Swift is one of them now, but she's down there in the lower thresholds, in the 1 billion plus, and you don't really even get on a Forbes list until you got quite a few billion.
With all the money going to an elite few, how does that leave the average American feeling about the economy?
Well, they kind of know the truth. I mean, the whole Fed loosening thing has really benefited the top tenth of 1% of zillionaires. And it's pretty amazing. You know, David Stockman put out a breakdown of who's gotten rich, and it's really just a small number of people, but the amount of riches, which again comes mostly from financial asset inflation, it's skewed so remarkably toward that 0.1%. But the increase in wealth, I think, was something like 300 to 400 times whatever the base number was, whereas it's only about 5x. For all the peons, and that 5x is not even kept up with inflation.
Is it amazing the number of Americans who have to hold two or three jobs to make ends meet? In other words, they're working 7 days a week?
Yeah, and that probably, I don't know how the Commerce Department or whoever keeps track of these things, Labor Department, reckons with that, but you can kind of suspect that if some guy's working three jobs just to make ends meet, that all three of those jobs count as jobs added to the economy. So I think that's probably a big part of it.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, will the Fed actually cut rates this year? Because now I've heard some reports that if inflation continues, especially in core services, where it could still be at 7%, maybe just one rate cut this year.
It would be kind of self-defeating, really. Be stupid. I think Powell likes to believe that he's in charge somehow. I mean, Powell answers to some of those, that 0.1%. They're the ones calling the shots. They're the one who put Powell in office. But for all his talk about staying tight, I think he'd look pretty ridiculous if he started loosening. It's easier for him to talk about, yeah, maybe we could have the right conditions for that. So that's where he seems to be right now. He's sort of at, well, maybe we'll see. And that's just, again, the Fed managing expectations in its crude way that's designed only to fool an idiot.
Is inflation under control in the U.S., or as long as it remains rampant, the chances of rate cuts remain low?
Well, what's scary is how much more inflation we're going to have. I mean, everything, you know, it's almost like a perfect storm here. We've got the destruction of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which apparently is a conduit for truckers that mostly the Baltimore port, the main durable good that comes through there is automobiles. So I think as a percentage, Baltimore Harbor is only maybe 5% of the trucker traffic, but it's the piece of it that's pretty important. So we're going to have inflation because of higher costs of getting goods distributed from alternatives to Baltimore. And I think the nearest port south of there is like Brunswick, Georgia. So everything's going to have to take a different route, and that's going to cause prices to go up. But also, the trucks that are making those deliveries are going to pay more for gas. So everything is pointing to higher inflation, and that you have to factor that into this question of whether Powell's going to loosen. We're going to be looking at higher inflation in the months ahead, not lower.
Is uranium still a good bet?
It is, depending on which day of the week you're wanting to place your bet. You know, I mean, it's like some stories never go completely out of style. One is the coal story. But uranium is, I think the current best story is what happened. I think it was Finland. Somebody has just begun a project. One of the European countries has begun a project to store radioactive waste, and they basically drilled a big tunnel into bedrock, and they encase the spent fuel in copper and clay, and then they put it in a place where even a massive earthquake wouldn't disturb it. And this somewhat shifts it improves the possibilities of nuclear power. If certainly Europeans have not been favorable toward nuclear power. Germany decommissioned its whole nuclear output, and France hasn't really kept up its investment. So here we've got an upstart in Europe saying, "Hey, look, we worked out a pretty good solution here that will allow us to deal with the spent fuel that is so much it's the biggest part of the objections of not just environmentalists, but all of us who would rather not risk dying of radiation poisoning."
Yes, it is Finland who built this facility designed to survive for 100,000 years, 430 meters underground, 420 meters below sea level in bedrock.
Yeah, it sounds pretty solid.
Well, and of course, if it isn't, you never know with the Earth. I mean, it's changing all the time, too, just like climate. It's either getting warmer or it's getting colder. It never stays the same.
Well, we had that when we were growing up. You're probably old enough to remember that we had it, and we called it weather.
I remember 1967 in northern Alberta, where I got a T-shirt that said, I survived 100 days below zero Fahrenheit, which is minus 18 Celsius. Yeah.
Well,
minus 65.
Who knew back then that they would come to describe that as global warming? I mean, we've changed the terminology, really, just to sort of suit the ends of the people who are trying to raise trillions, ostensibly, to give us better weather. But we're in a time of climate change. But again, when we were little, we used to call that weather.
Well, no one has explained to me how a carbon tax is going to affect the biggest things that affect your climate, changes in the Earth's orbit, its tilt. The tilt changed a meter about a year ago. Nobody paid any attention to that. Solar activity, asteroid hits, cosmic radiation, volcanoes. Those are the factors that really affect climate. And no one has explained to me how a carbon tax affects any of those.
Well, in theory, it could, you know. And my problem with the whole climate change hubris is that even if it were true that man is the major contributor to changes, big changes in the weather, I guess a global warming, it's a real stretch to think that if we raise trillions and trillions, tens of trillions of dollars, maybe even hundreds of trillions, that some central organization could use that money to give us better weather. I just don't think that's in the cards. And that's theoretically what we're talking about. You know, if we send enough money to Brussels or wherever, that they're going to give us more clement weather. Somehow I'm doubting that.
Well, last year, Canada had raging forest fires, the worst air quality ever. I think that would affect climate, and yet some of those fires, over 100 of them, are still burning, and I don't see any massive government efforts to put them out. It's like it's become its own industry. We had an aircraft, the Martin Mars, that could put out 4 acres of fire at a time, but governments grounded it because they're using little pontoon planes now where the water evaporates before it hits the fire. It's a huge industry now where billions are spent fighting forest fires. Somebody's making a lot of money doing it, and nobody's talking about that.
You are.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we... whenever you say they're not doing anything, you got to think, well, who would they be?
Well, who makes money? The people who fly those little tiny airplanes that don't put out the fire, and the companies that run them. They're making loads of money. They can fly all day and fly all night. I watched three of them drop water on a burning barn as a demonstration. The barn was still burning after they were done. Again, the monstrous Martin Mars puts out 4 acres at a time. When we had a bog fire here in Vancouver, we were told it would take 3 months to put out. The Martin Mars flew for 3 days and had the thing under control. Watched a documentary on that plane. Mexico hired it for 3 months to fight forest fires, but it went home after a month because it put them all out. It's too good. It's like they want us to burn to demonstrate why we need to pay a carbon tax. When I say they, I'm talking governments and the people who get these massive contracts to fight these things.
Well, I think pretty much anything that happens is used as an argument for the carbon tax, and it doesn't matter whether it's a snowstorm or 30 straight days of 100-degree weather. It's independently of where we are on the temperature spectrum. So, yeah, I guess ultimately everything winds up being an argument for climate, well, if not changing it, adjusting it, tweaking it, improving weather. But that's really, I think that's the premise, right, isn't it?
Well, I think
we send enough.
Yeah. The thing is, Canadians it seems, are bearing the entire burden of the world. We produce less than 2% of the so-called greenhouse gases, but we're the ones paying monstrously high carbon taxes. You don't pay any in the U.S. They don't pay any in Russia. They don't pay any in China. They don't pay any in India. Well, that's where all the pollution, where all the CO2 is being produced. But in Canada, they put more and more taxes on. They've banned the use of natural gas in Vancouver. And yet BC's awash in natural gas. We have over 200 years worth of proven reserves. And why did natural gas all of a sudden become a dirty fuel? Just a few years ago, they were converting all kinds of vehicles to use natural gas because it was much cleaner than gasoline.
Well, just because it has that,
it's a fossil fuel. So as soon as
it's
a fossil fuel, right?
And you know, it's fossil fuel is such a hideous thing that we shouldn't even have barbecues or gas stoves anymore. But you can see, though, the gas stove, the ban on gas stoves, effectively through what types of appliances can be put in New York apartment buildings that are under construction, things like that. They slowly, New York gets a grip on gas stoves, and before you know it, we're in the situation with the light bulbs. Nobody can find a good light bulb anymore. But so in that case, though, it really was a step too far. And I think the publicity that got out there about, hey, take a look at what's going on here, because we're not going to be able to cook on gas stoves if this trend continues. And I think we stopped it in its tracks.
I also saw a report from NASA at the height of the pandemic in China, where all the factories were shut down. People were locked in their homes. Their emissions only went down 15%. And that's with a total shutdown. People said,
right.
Yeah.
And you've got those huge offsets in places like India and Russia that don't pay much attention to the carbon dioxide. Let's call it pollution. And
Well, yes, they talk about methane and natural gas. In Canada and the U.S., natural gas is a commercial product. People don't waste it, and we have really tight government regulations on how much can be released. Places like Russia, they don't care. Has anything been made well in Russia apart from spacecraft? They have the best ejection seats in the world for their fighter aircraft because the guys who make them are drunk, and the planes aren't reliable.
That's good. It's a tradition that began with the Lada.
Oh yeah, it would be the Lada.
Well, even the Lada had its vogue and was commanding premium prices in the U.S. market.
Yes, the Russian life expectancy has dropped 6 years because of their rampant alcoholism, and now they have some kind of real vile drug called Crocodile. And I watched a Vice documentary on that. Anybody who uses it is dead within 6 months.
So that will save. I mean, it's a lot of wear and tear to drink yourself to death. So this crocodile sounds like a solution of sorts.
Do you think speaking of drugs, is the U.S. federal government going to, if not legalize marijuana, decriminalize it?
No, I think we'll talk about it forever without quite getting to some reasonable place. The states, at some level, it becomes a states' rights issue. All the states sort of have gone their separate ways. Very easy to acquire marijuana in Colorado and California, a couple other places, but in Florida, not so much. And you can see we haven't made much headway. You know, in the late 50s, early 60s, Lenny Bruce used to say that virtually all of his lawyer friends smoked dope, and that they would eventually become congressmen, and marijuana would become legal. But in the ensuing 60-some years, that's happened somewhat, but not quite to the extent that Lenny might have imagined. So it's just, we also still debate whether marijuana is good for you or not good for you per se, but it is it good for what ails you. And of course, you've got billions of people in this world, I think billions, certainly hundreds of millions, willing to testify to the health miracles that marijuana has produced. Chemotherapy patients who have nausea under control, and people who are managing chronic pain. There are just so many good things that so many things that marijuana helps, that it's good for, that we shouldn't be even having that argument. But of course, it goes up against the big pharma's remedies, which are, well, you can understand why we even have that dialogue.
Garce, one of the arguments is marijuana was the biggest money maker for organized crime. So why have organized crime make that money when it can go to the other branch of organized crime, the government?
Yeah, exactly. I guess the government's willing to countenance anything it can tax, ultimately. And so I guess that's probably the best thing in favor of more marijuana, more legalization. But on the other hand, you know, the taxing reflex has created thriving black markets in the states where like New Jersey, where marijuana is taxed very heavily. I can't remember. It's like looking at the retail price of gasoline and seeing what the state adds on to every gallon. Hmm. So in New Jersey, they got to the point of killing the golden goose there with a pretty good-sized black and gray market.
Rick, always fun chatting with you.
Always, Jim. I appreciate the chance to connect with your audience. And I guess today's good news really is that gold's rally seems to be for real, and that it only very recently, within the last 24 hours or so, did something that suggests that this move is going to continue.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.